Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We've got a big weekend of sports to look forward to here in the United States, with the National Basketball Association playoffs tipping off on Saturday, the National Hockey League first round playoffs continuing, a full slate of Major League Baseball games, the Heritage Golf Tournament in South Carolina, Major League Soccer, and even American-style college football games. But first off, we'll look back on the week that was with our VOA colleague Jim Stevenson. Jim looks at Patrick Reed's first major championship at the Masters in Augusta, Georgia, and the United States Davis Cup team reaching the tournament's semifinals for the first time in over 5 years.
To win your first majors is never going to be easy, and it definitely wasn't easy today.
American Patrick Reed rose above all of his personal obstacles to win the Masters in Augusta, Georgia, the first major golf tournament of the year. Reed's journey to his first career major and the coveted green jacket finished at 15 under par, and also by overcoming crowd favorite Rory McIlroy of Northern Ireland in the final pairing.
I knew it was going to be a dogfight, and it's just a way of God basically saying that let's see if you have it. Everyone knows you have it physically, you know, with the talent, but do you have it mentally? Can you handle those ups and downs throughout the round?
Reed was kicked off his University of Georgia team, nearly voted off his Augusta State team by his schoolmates for offenses that ranged from alcohol-fueled misbehavior to an arrest for underage drinking to constantly talking down to lesser teammates, even alleged cheating. McIlroy verbally taunted Reed the night before the final round, saying all the pressure is on him, since Reed had only accomplished one top 10 finish and second at last summer's PGA Championship. McIlroy was taking aim at a career grand slam of all four majors, but Reed stayed mentally tough and drew from experience.
I think the biggest thing was just, of course, I felt like the game was in a little better shape coming in, but just the experiences from in the past. I knew the golf course a little better. I had a little more experience around the course this year coming in. And, you know, really my mindset going in was, you know, stick to my game plan, play golf.
Ricky Fowler made a run with four birdies over the last seven holes to finish one shot behind for his third second-place finish in a major tournament.
Unfortunately, one shot short, but we were able to keep P. Reed honest out there, at least making him earn it. And solo second feels and sounds better than tied for second, so it was nice to edge up Jordan on the last.
Reed also repelled the amazing run of birdies put together by third-place American and former Masters champion Jordan Spieth, whose 8-under par 64 was among the best closing rounds the Masters had ever seen. Fowler, as he always has done, cheered for the winner.
You know, he's a fighter. When he gets in, especially when he gets in contention, he's going to grind it out and obviously, you know, happy for him.
Amid Reed's turbulent past was a dream to win the Masters.
Every time you think about it as a kid growing up, it's always, you know, this putt's to win a green jacket, this putt's to win the Masters. And I think that's just because of the history and everything that's gone on here at Augusta National and how, you know, special it is to all the golfers and special it is to just golf in general around the world.
As for Fowler, he says this was the first major in which he felt comfortable enough to be able to win.
I'm ready to go. So I'm really looking forward to this year and the three majors that are left.
Spanish golfer Jon Rahm takes his solid fourth-place Masters finish home to the Open de España, or Spanish Open. Rahm was a member of the Centre Nacional de Golf during his teenage years and will hope to make his advantage count.
This is where I developed most of my golf skills. Before, when I was in Barica, Spain, I could only go to the golf course a couple times a week. And when I was here, I was able to practice a lot more and, you know, meet some of my teammates. I became really good friends, you know, just... It was just such two great years of my life, golf-wise.
His advice for everyone else playing his home course?
You need to drive it really straight. Those fairways are narrow. They're not easy. You need to keep it on the fairways, because if you miss the fairway, you're going to get some funky lies. It's a lot of slopes, and you might be close to the green, but it's going to be hard to hit a close shot.
Rahm is hoping to add his national title to a string of national wins as an amateur.
I'm blessed to be able to say I'm Spanish Golf Federation national champion for the ages of on the 16, 18, 21 in all ages, right? I think it's four or five different categories I'm a champion of, and some of them a couple times. For this year to be a part of it and knowing that all the Spanish legends have won it, and I would just love to add my name to something like that, you know, be like kind of linking my pro and amateur career and just getting this final step. It'll be amazing.
Andrew Beef Johnston is the defending champion from 2 years ago, as the event was absent from the European Tour last year. It's the first time the Spanish Open has been hosted at the Madrid-based course since 2007, and the Royal Spanish Golf Federation is celebrating by allowing fans to attend for free this week. The United States has reached the semifinals of the Davis Cup for the first time since 2012. Captain Jim Courier was happy with a 4-0 win over Belgium in Nashville, Tennessee.
It wasn't easy. The Belgians certainly played their part as well. They played very, very tough. All three matches. This doubles team is not someone that we knew a whole lot about, but they earned a lot of respect from our guys. Took us a while to really dig our teeth into the match, and that second set tiebreaker was critical for us.
On Friday, world number 9 John Isner picked up a singles win, fresh off his Miami Open title. Sam Querrey was also a winner. Ryan Harrison closed out his singles match on Sunday before teaming with Jack Sock to take a tough doubles win.
I mean, Ryan, he's a quality doubles player. You don't win a major if you can't get the job done, and we know Jack is such an electric player, too. The other team just made it so difficult. They smothered the net. They made it very, very hard. There are very few open lanes for our guys to play through. But we just hung in there, didn't drop serve much, and, you know, just the one time, and eventually finally cracked the code at the end.
Jim Courier's team will next travel to Croatia for their tie in September.
I'm not sure whether I'm happy or relieved, to be honest. We've had plenty of chances and just haven't been able to get through the line, but the team came through. Look, we're fortunate. We're happy. We're looking forward to an opportunity in the semifinals.
That's VOA's Jim Stevenson. Thanks for contributing to the Sunny Side of Sports, Jim. And be sure to look for Jim's work every week on the VOA website at voanews.com. Search for The Game Room. An interesting side note to Patrick Reed's Masters victory. Golf.com had a big story after the tournament detailing Reed's strained relationship with his parents, who were not in Augusta to celebrate their son's victory. Alan Shipnick wrote about Bill and Jeanette Reed not being allowed on the course to watch their son play in the biggest tournament of his young career. Reed was a driven golfer from a young age, practicing for hours almost every day, so much so that he didn't have a social life as a teenager. As Jim mentioned, Reed wound up attending the University of Georgia on a golf scholarship, where he was joined on the team by a number of other golfers who would eventually turn pro. Reed left the university after some difficulties, but eventually married a woman named Justine Corain as a 22-year-old. His parents advised him that getting married at such a young age was perhaps not such a good idea. But Reed resisted their advice, and it strained their relationship to this day. They were not invited to his wedding, and for over 5 years, the Reeds have not had communication with their son. The family disconnect was not covered during the broadcast of the tournament, but it'll be worth watching to see if the Reeds are able to mend their relationship, especially as Patrick moves into the upper echelon of the golf world. If you're looking for more from Reed and the other golfers mentioned in Jim's recap, mark this date down on your calendar. The U.S. Open tournament starts exactly 2 months from now at the famed Shinnecock Hills Golf Course on the far eastern edge of Long Island in New York State. Tiger Woods just announced he will be there attempting to win another major. The course last hosted the tournament in 2004 when South Africa's Retief Goosen won the tournament, edging American Phil Mickelson by 2 strokes. Next up, in our globe-trotting tour of the world of sports, Monique John joins us from Monrovia, Liberia, with an update on the Liberia Football Association's presidential election coming up Saturday. 3 candidates are in place to replace Moussa Bility as the head of the organization.
The three men vying for presidential office have some big shoes to fill. Businessman Musa Bility, a vocal and influential figure in the international football world, is stepping down after leading the LFA for 12 years. Stakeholders in Liberian football are to vote for the LFA's new president on Saturday at Painesville's SKD Stadium. However, complaints to FIFA by a former contender for presidential office, Rochelle Woodson, has put doubts over whether the election will take place on the originally scheduled date. Woodson, a member of the LFA's executive committee, said the election officials scheduled the vote too early in the year based on the association's rules. She also said the executive committee unlawfully changed the criteria for candidate eligibility and accused Bility of intervening to skew election results. FIFA took Woodson's complaints to the LFA, to which the association partially conceded to making the violations it was being accused of. Still, FIFA has yet to announce whether it will halt the LFA's election and order a rerun. Despite the pushback, the LFA spokesperson says the organization is moving along with its electoral proceedings as planned. One of the candidates in the race is Bility's vice president, Musa Shannon. Before his role in the administration, Shannon served as a national player and played in Portugal, the U.S., and China. After the LFA's presidential debate on Wednesday, Shannon spoke about his unique qualifications for the top office.
From my professional background as an athlete, I think that's the obvious thing that I would bring to the table. It's just management, sustainability, and creating structures that can allow Liberian football to grow from strength to strength.
Shannon's campaign is tainted, however, after he admitted to taking about $1,500 US in Ebola funds sent from FIFA back in 2014. On local radio, Shannon has said that he returned the money, but his affiliation to Bility's administration, that has been accused of being corrupt, may hurt him in the polls. Another contestant is Mustafa Raji, the current president of the football club, the LISCRFC, and communications professional.
I come from the grassroots, and I believe that I can make a difference from where it is. I think the past administration did well, so it is now time for us to move it forward and create a higher benchmark.
Raja has worked with the youth. Promoting equality is a major facet of his campaign.
FIFA want to focus more on women's football, and we want to focus on women's football. We're going to work with the government of Liberia to promote female football because we have abandoned Liberian female football. We want to empower women, strengthen them.
The third candidate is one of President George Weah's former teammates and a past chairman in his political party, George Solo. After playing in the Invisible 11, Solo transitioned into an administrative role as the vice president of Nimba FC, while also consulting for the national team and the World Cup. From his home in Painesville, Solo says he wants to make football accessible and highlights the need to make resources in athletic gear and tools more readily available to talented players with potential who are from varying socioeconomic backgrounds.
We are the best option because the passion is from the grassroots. We are the best option because we are determined to change the game. We are the best option because we have the best strategy and the best mindset for decentralization, enhancing infrastructure, building our competitive nature.
A lingering question over Solo's campaign is whether President Weah has expressed any support to Solo in his endeavor to lead the LFA. But Solo says Weah is prohibited from getting involved, as international regulations bar politicians from intervening in football. A little over 30 stakeholders, including local club owners, are scheduled to vote on Saturday. Voters will also be casting ballots for two vice president positions and for the LFA's executive committee. The club owner of the Monrovia Club Breweries, Eric Panton, was tight-lipped on who he was supporting and his perception of the candidates, but he expressed his hope for the election to move forward without corruption.
And if football have to win, we the electorate will do the right thing for Liberia. And the right thing will be not to take money to vote for football because of money. In the past, it has been alleged that people took money and voted. This time around, let us vote wisely and let us vote for football development.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Monique John in Monrovia.
Thank you, Monique. We'll look forward to the results of the election and the continuing soccer news from Liberia. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Keeping with the world of soccer, some big news Friday with the draw for the semifinals of the UEFA Champions League. My VOA colleague, Gwen Uten, brings us up to date. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. Hey, sports fans. Well, the UEFA Champions League semifinal matchups have been confirmed. Here they are. First, two-time defending champion Real Madrid will face Bayern Munich in their seventh semifinal matchup. Real Madrid is in the semis for the eighth straight year and is seeking a record-extending 13th European title. Five-time champion Bayern Munich has not been to the Champions League final since 2014, but they have eliminated Madrid in the semifinals in the past, in 1976, 1987, and 2001. So, will they do it again this year? We'll see. That match takes place in Madrid. In the other semifinal, Liverpool was drawn to face Roma, a repeat matchup from the 1984 final held in Rome, where Liverpool won the fourth of its five European titles in a penalty shootout. This is Liverpool's first Champions League semifinal match since 2008, and this year it will be played on their home field. Well, Dan, as you can imagine, the Twitterverse is full of predictions on which teams will reach the finals. Overwhelmingly, the tweets read like this one: Champions League Final 2018, Real Madrid versus Liverpool. But there were others who predicted an upset of some kind. One saw the final matchup looking like Roma versus Real. Another wrote Bayern versus Liverpool. One tweeter wrote what could be described as a fleeting wish. It should be a Real Madrid versus Bayern final. They were the two best teams left in the competition, and I think it would have been one of the best finals to watch. Now I guess Liverpool will win it again. And this tweeter stayed diplomatic about all the teams, writing, German efficiency versus Spanish flair. The Real Bayern semifinal will be epic. Madrid looked more vulnerable at the back, and Bayern can exploit that weakness. Liverpool probably has the draw they wanted, but you cannot rule out Roma after their epic comeback versus the Catalan Giants. First legs of the Champions League will be played on April 24th and 25th, with return games on May 1st and 2nd. The final match will be held on May 26th in Kiev, Ukraine's Olympic Stadium. Well, sports fans, with 62 days to go until the start of the World Cup, how about another fun fact? 62 is the number of games England contested at the FIFA World Cup. That includes five matches against Germany alone. The Three Lions have taken part in a total of 14 World Cups, including eight of the last nine tournaments. But they have emerged victorious only once, in 1966 against West Germany. England won 4-2 in extra time. That victory puts England, along with France, as the only two teams to become world champions on home turf. Those who remember that match in 1966 may also remember Pickles the dog, who became famous for finding the stolen Jules Rimet trophy before the start of the tournament. Gotta love dogs. This year's FIFA World Cup kicks off in Russia on June 14th, and the countdown continues. That's it for me. I'll kick it back to you, Dan. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. The entire sports world is primed for that Final Four matchup, and that's a great note about England. Maybe we'll see the Lions go deep into this year's tournament. Speaking of another tournament, the National Basketball Association playoffs tip off on Saturday. Sonny and I discussed the matchups on Thursday. There are four first-round games on Saturday and four more on Sunday. I'm looking forward to the Philadelphia 76ers playing the Miami Heat on Saturday and the Cavs and the Pacers on Sunday. Joining us now for some NBA playoff talk is USA Today's NBA editor Michael Singer. Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Michael, what is the outlook for our shared hometown Cleveland Cavaliers? Do you think they're going to make it back to the finals this year?
A fascinating question, and I think that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of intrigue going into this postseason. LeBron James has made 7 consecutive NBA Finals appearances. Obviously, 3 in a row with the Cavs since he's come back. There's a lot riding on this particular one, given that LeBron is going to be a free agent this year. So, as you well know, there's a lot of angst and concern that whatever happens at the end of this postseason run could conceivably affect LeBron's decision. The Cavs have had an extremely tumultuous year. They basically overhauled their roster at the trade deadline. The coach, Ty Lue, recently took a leave of absence to address some health issues, some internal discord at the beginning of the year while they were trying to adapt to the play of Isaiah Thomas. There's definitely more questions facing these Cavaliers than there have been in the last 3 postseasons. That being said, they still have LeBron James, and I am not convinced that any team in the East is better than the Cavs, even though we obviously acknowledge that they are vulnerable going into this.
So, Michael, I know that the USA Today Sports NBA staff is not sure who the Cavs will face on the other side of the bracket. A lot of people think there is a good chance that the Houston Rockets can make the finals. Have we seen the end of the Golden State Warriors' dominance in the NBA Championship Series?
Well, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say this is the end of their dominance, because it's totally conceivable that they could be back in this spot next year. The reason why the Golden State Warriors are vulnerable heading into this year is because Steph Curry has a grade 2 MCL sprain, and Steve Kerr has already ruled him out for the first round. So given that they've had some other nicks and injuries to Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, and Kevin Durant had a rib fracture not long ago, those are fair questions to say whether the Warriors are entirely capable and able to meet the standard that they've set for themselves the last 3 years. I'm not sure that this is necessarily the end of them. That being said, I think that the Houston Rockets pose a greater challenge than any other team has to them in the past 3 years. The Rockets set a franchise record. I believe they had 63 or 64 wins this season. James Harden, Chris Paul are obviously future Hall of Famers, fantastic players. They have a ton of shooters. Their defense is significantly improved. I think that if they meet in the Western Conference Finals, I think the Rockets have the edge in that series, which you can't say of any other team against the Warriors in the last 3 years.
So, Michael, one of the teams that we've been following this year here on the Sunny Side of Sports is the Philadelphia 76ers with their African star Joel Embiid. Is there a chance that we could see Embiid and the likely Rookie of the Year in the championship series? Can they take down the Cavs in the East?
So that's a pretty that would be going pretty that would be going out on a limb if I were to say that they could be reach the NBA Finals from the East. That being said, I don't think it's inconceivable. The 76ers have had a good track record against the Cavs if they do meet them in the conference finals, as I predicted on USA Today Sports. I think that the 76ers, as we wrote today, they're the dark horse of the East. Nobody knows how good they can be. I think they have the second most wins in the NBA since January 1st. Their defense is among the best in the entire league. Ben Simmons has taken the league by storm and is going to win the Rookie of the Year. And Joel Embiid, now that he's healthy, has played really well. I mean, I say that healthy with a qualifier, given that he has an orbital fracture and is unlikely to play in Game 1 against the Miami Heat. But he'll be back either in the first round or potentially in the second round. And then the 76ers are going to be at full strength. And I don't think that there's a team in the East that wants to face the 76ers.
That's Michael Singer, the NBA editor from USA Today, previewing the NBA playoffs. Thanks for joining us, Michael. That wraps up the April 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to our producer, Bill Werkinger, and VOA engineer, Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedell, in for Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Congo, Todd Haskell, kicked off Embassy Brazzaville's Goa Goa Week on March 19th. The inauguration event was the first in a full week of activities to educate Congolese entrepreneurs and government workers on the benefits of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. Signed into law in 2000, now extended through 2025, AGOA provides 40 eligible sub-Saharan African countries in 2018 the ability to export more than 6,500 different types of products into the United States duty-free. Through its eligibility criteria, AGOA encourages countries to make progress in establishing policies that support a market-based economy, a strong rule of law, poverty reduction, and systems to combat corruption and bribery, while not erecting barriers to U.S. trade and investment. Embassy Brazzaville brought AGOA expert Cara Diallo from the USAID West African Trade Hub to present the steps necessary to export to the United States and available resources for business owners to find more information at www.agoa.info. Currently, more than 80% of exports to the United States from the Republic of Congo are from petroleum-based products. However, the future health and expansion of the Congo economy will rely on export diversification. Through the multitude of media interviews, articles, meetings with ministry officials, business owners, and entrepreneurs throughout the Goa Goa Week, Embassy Brazzaville hopes to see an increase in both the amount and diversity of Congolese products entering the United States marketplace in the coming years, while strengthening the Congolese market for increased U.S. exports to the country. Congo has tremendous potential for economic diversification in the areas of agriculture, ecotourism, and transportation, said Ambassador Haskell in his remarks. This potential cannot be realized by one ministry or one business. Developing the Republic of Congo's economy, he said, is a team project.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
On the next edition of Press Conference USA, a conversation about Middle East politics. Alan Lapson, director of the Center for Security Policy Studies at George Mason University, analyzes Syria, Iraq, Iran, and the protests in Gaza, among other critical issues. That's Press Conference USA, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.